From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. And if you didn't catch our opening for the Friday show at 1 o'clock, you should probably check the podcast page and listen to that again, because Evan Dawson made a Tony Award-winning performance by singing a beautifully composed song.
Are you done with this?
I thought it was great. You thought of it in the car.
I did. I was driving to work and I thought, you know, I wasn't a big fan of La La Land. We were talking at Oscars preview, and La La Land's probably going to win Best Oscar, or, you know, a lot more than that, in fact, if you base it on the Golden Globes. I didn't hate it. I just, I had some problems with it, and I thought it'd be fun to write sort of a cheeky, kind of have a little fun with La La Land piece. That's all.
I thought it was great. We got a lot of good feedback.
We did. We had a lot of good feedback. But don't get used to that, you know? Let's open the podcast with some, let's call it real music and really interesting music. This might have been my favorite conversation on the show in months. We welcomed Rufus Cappadocia. He's from Hamilton, Ontario, originally. He began playing cello at age 3, and at the age of 17, he decided to experiment. He added a 5th string to his cello, and he began playing the cello in many different ways.
Rufus has become one of the most innovative musicians in the world. He travels to support social and environmental causes, and on Connections, he began with a lesson on history and culture, and how the cello is not just one instrument, but many.
There's the, they call it the jelly ngoni, which is the little ngoni, which is the ancestor of the banjo. And so that's kind of up in the upper register. Down a little ways is the kamelengoni, which is the pentatonic harp from the desert region of Mali, Niger area. Mainly Mali, and you hear it a lot with like Omu Sangare. On the last album I did, Yakuba Mumuni from Niger also plays it. So that guy's more in the... So, you know, and the kamelengoni is actually the children's version of the dosengoni, which is the bass harp that is a ceremonial instrument. You have to be initiated to play it, and it's part of the hunters' society. And again... Right, and that's more in the plucked range, and then in the in the bowed range, you know, there's a whole they start in Mauritania, and it's a cultural continuum that spans the whole desert and Sahelian region of Africa. So it starts in Mauritania and it covers all the way through to Ethiopia, and it changes with each region and culture and dialect, but you know, basically, there's... So, for example, this is a traditional melody from, I don't even remember where, but... I can remember that was like on that album in the library from 30 years ago.
When was the last time you played that?
I don't know, 20 years ago?
Wow.
I'm not really sure.
It's still in there.
But for example, you know, and then there's also just basically the Fulani sound. that desert pentatonic scale. And what's been really fascinating for me, you slowly realize when you really get into music and into folklore as well, you don't really invent anything. It's kind of already been done. It's very hard if you're certainly outside of the electronic realm. It's very hard to actually invent a new kind of music because there's always a lineage.
I have to say, I'd highly recommend you listen to the entire hour. You can find it in your podcast feed if you subscribe to Connections or at wxxinews.org/connections.
We had a discussion about the heroin epidemic this week, and in particular, how it's impacting the North Clinton section of Rochester. One of our guests was Matt Woodring, a former addict who opened up about his history of abuse.
Woody wanted to paint the picture of what life can be like for people who deal with addiction. His addiction started out with painkillers like Vicodin.
I ate my first Vicodin pill when I was 19 years old in 1999. By the time I was 27 years old, I was eating 150 10-milligram Vicodins a day. I would wake up and eat 10 or 15 of them, and that would go every 2 or 3 hours, 7 a.m., 9 a.m., noon, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, dinner, after dinner, after work, and it would just, that was a daily thing. So as that continued to progress, my body became very physically dependent
on
drugs.
What do you spend, what's 150 pills a day cost?
150 pills a day. That street value, you're looking at anywhere from $300 to $500 a day.
A day?
Yeah.
Where are you getting the money for that?
Well, often in those circles, drug users buy and sell drugs from each other. Things like that aren't hard to get, but they also, you can't just walk into Wegmans and say, I'm ready for another 200.
Yeah, sure, right.
So oftentimes, my friends and I were selling drugs to each other, and and I was working a job. So in addition to having my job, the addiction fueled itself for a long time until it hit that point where it paid for itself until it didn't.
Okay.
And that was kind of really when a lot of the consequences started to come up. I stopped paying my rent. I started robbing my friends. I would tell a friend, oh, sure, I'll get you 100 Vicodins and take his $300. And then I'd come back to him a day later with some story that was a lie because I needed the drugs. So I would do whatever I had to do, whether it was robbing my friends and family or lying to the people around me. I would tell close friends I need to borrow some money to pay my rent, and I wasn't even paying my rent. Very quickly, in that last couple years, I lost a job that I worked for a long time. I was evicted from an apartment, and after that happened, it wasn't a year before I was in jail on a felony burglary charge. I was homeless. I had
but
lost.
But you still weren't on heroin?
No, I still wasn't on heroin.
I'm just trying to figure out, when did heroin hit?
Right after that.
Okay.
Right after that. A big thing that happened was I went to jail for the first time in 2008, I think, maybe 2008, yeah. It was November 9th of 2008. And I spent 2 months in there. And when I got out, there was no treatment. I was waiting on the law process. And so I wasn't sentenced to anything. I was waiting for court dates. And I was just kind of being held on a large bail. And I had burned enough bridges. My family was not looking to let me back into that lifestyle. So they determined, my family decided it was probably best to just leave me where I was. They knew I was safe. So from there, I was put into Rochester Drug Treatment Court. And I had my first experience with 12-step programs. I got sent into an outpatient rehab program. I wasn't personally interested. What I was interested in was removing the consequences. I didn't want to go to prison. And which is a different thing than county jail. I was not looking to go and spend 3 or 5 or 7 years in prison. So I started into these programs where I started to meet more addicts like me. And a good friend of mine who I had known for a long time and our addictions kind of progressed together started to tell me, well, you're spending all this money on Vicodin and for $10 you can get the same effect out of a bag of heroin. And that was when I switched to heroin and started using needles.
Next up, let's listen to a contentious part of our discussion on how New York State funds economic projects. You might know that there are 10 regional economic development councils. The Finger Lakes region is led by people from business, government, academia, people like Danny Wegman, Ann Kress of MCC, and Vinny Esposito, who works for the governor. They were all on the show. Their job is to figure out which companies deserve state tax dollars to help get started.
During our discussion, Gatestown Supervisor Mark Cassini called in, and he criticized the council for funding a list of projects that have failed, including the Muller Yogurt Plant. Here's Danny Wegman and Mark Cassini debating that, and then you'll hear Vinny Esposito.
Mark, would you have bet on Muller Yogurt?
Would I have bet on Muller Yogurt?
Yes. They're the largest. PepsiCo is one of the largest companies in America. Their credit was extremely good. If you were going to bet on somebody, you would have bet on Muller Yogurt. And they just didn't make it work.
See, I don't bet with the taxpayers' money. I think that the question becomes, if we're going to invest using taxpayers' money, I think we need to be transparent about it. The taxpayer needs to know exactly what's happening with their money. And in this case, I'm not criticizing anybody for trying to pick this project, but it's one of those things where we put money into a project. I don't know exactly how much. I don't think the average person knows exactly how much because that hasn't been reported.
Well, it has, Mark. So this is a good example. This is a project that didn't work. We put forward a major incentive, and they received a very small fraction. So the round numbers were of a $13 million incentive. They received about $1 million of that incentive because for 3 years, they did meet the benchmarks of investment and job creation that they said they were going to. But then the business failed, and therefore the majority of the taxpayer dollars did not go out the door. So you're correct, and you're citing examples where economic development is not perfect and why we need to be smarter and more accountable. But those answers are provided. We provided those answers to several media outlets, to several FOIL requests. So Empire State Development does keep track of those things and is transparent as much as possible on every, you know, the council alone has funded more than 600 projects just in the Finger Lakes region. So at some point, it's a volume issue. It's not a question.
Not to be disagreeable on that, but I'd simply say there's no reason why an audit can't be done on every project showing how much we spent to date and how many jobs have been created. It's a simple thing. It is not hard to do. It's not something that should be resisted. It's something I think that would help the transparency issue that the council right now has.
All right, Mr. Supervisor, I'm going to let him answer that, and I've got to grab other calls, but thank you for taking
the time.
Thank you,
guys. Thanks for answering my questions, too. God bless.
That's Mark Cassini from Gates. So, can you do more?
I don't disagree with that. We want to be as transparent as possible at every project we fund, and we're taking steps every day to improve that proactive disclosure on the website and the processes by which we can provide answers for on-demand questions about projects.
The website is what, Vinny?
Regional Councils, all one word, .ny.gov.
Next up, here's a business that has not gotten any help from taxpayers, but it's thriving. The Arnett Cafe in Rochester has become a popular word-of-mouth destination for comfort food dishes like chicken and waffles and shrimp and grits.
The co-owner, Norman Brown, is a big personality who had a lot to say about growing up in Rochester and what's changed. This clip starts with a question from Evan about his upbringing.
You grew up not that many blocks away from where your business is now, right?
Yeah, about 4 blocks away on Roslyn Street, where my mother still resides at.
What are your first memories of childhood?
Oh, man. I had a wonderful childhood. So when I think about memories, I always think about, I'm not sure if you guys ever saw the movie Sandlot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what an awesome movie. And I think that's what we were. You know, we were kids like the Sandlot. It wasn't nothing that we didn't do and didn't experience, you know. So I had a wonderful childhood. So I just think about building clubhouses, helicopters, bomb sleds, go riding go-karts, mini bikes, and sneaking around and cooking in each individual home. And that was our childhood life.
Wait. Sneaking around and doing what?
Cooking. Yeah, so when parents went to sleep, we went to each individual house and we did some cooking.
What?
Yeah.
You and your friends?
Yeah, my friends.
Whether
How old
it was
were
making
you when
baked
ziti or, 11, 12.
And you were making, so let's talk about what you were cooking. You were making, you said baked ziti.
Yeah, baked ziti, wings, and just anything that we can get our hands on to just try. We were just those type of kids who just liked to experiment and everything.
Well, who doesn't love to eat, right?
Yeah.
But you must have somebody in your family then who cooked for you to want to do that, right? Mom?
I was a guy who sat by the stove, you know, watching mom cook. So when I did move away to New York City, I was always give her a call to, you know, find out certain recipes that I liked that she did when I was younger. So she always was an inspiration as far as cooking and health and cooking very healthy too as well. So
I got a lot of it was cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was healthy that she would do?
Oh, vegetables. We did I just remember eating so many fresh vegetables and not a lot of fried foods, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
salads and just she didn't cook with too much grease or stuff. You know what I mean? It was more broiled and boiled food and baked and more than fried and more vegetables than meat. So you always had a three course meal, that making sure you get an even balance of what you're eating properly. So it was pretty good. Mom was pretty good with that.
Was there one go to meal though for like a holiday or a big event that she would do that you loved?
Oh man, collard greens and fried chicken. That she mastered. She's from the South, so she was pretty good with that. You know, so yeah, those were it.
What part of the South?
Albany, Georgia.
Albany, Georgia.
Albany, Georgia. Where I was born, but I came up here when I was about 5 weeks old. But she was originally born down there as well. Our whole family's from there. So,
do you know what brought them to Rochester?
Family. It was more opportunity for my mother. She wanted to go to school. So she came up here and went to school, and she got a job at the Strong Memorial Hospital, where she retired at 33 years. So it's better opportunity for her up here in the upstate. You know,
you're painting a really nice picture of childhood. You really enjoyed your childhood, it sounds like.
Man, I was a kid. I didn't have to grow up fast. You know what I mean? I did what kids were supposed to do. You know what I mean? And so there's no regrets. I mean, you have your cuts and your bruises, you know, as you grow up and just anything you do in life. But far as childhood, man, it was awesome. I still have the same childhood friends. You know what I mean? So it was just a great childhood, man. You know, it was a good, great, great block to grow up on, where you had great families, very successful families on there. You know, we had the first, on Roslyn Street, just to give you a little background history of Roslyn, we had the first black lady superintendent of City of School District, Loretta Johnson. And we also had, the vice president of Coca-Cola, who also lived on the block. We had two high school teachers who also kept you straight. We had some Xerox executives. So it was just like such a mixture of judges and lawyers and such a mixture. You could not get outside the block without going wrong. You know what I mean? So you just had people constantly watching when you left home. So it grew up everybody. Everybody kind of did okay as they kind of grew up. You know what I mean? Just because of the focus of the block and the caring of the parents, you know, which I guess sometimes neighborhoods don't have anymore. So I'm blessed with that, you know.
Yeah, you talk about the sandlot. I think about, you know, the kids just going to the lot and playing.
Just playing.
And, you know, and it seems like today, if kids went to do that, somebody would show up and say that the parents should be charged with negligence or something. Like,
Absolutely.
Kids can't stay out all day playing, right?
Absolutely.
And it's just a different world now. That kind of worries me a little bit.
It's a different world, you know. Well, the trust factor is not there anymore for society, you know, just not just for parents, but for society, you know. And we always look for the bad in a person, you know what I mean? So we never really look for the good, you know. So society has said, you know, kids can't play. Parents, you don't to be too afraid to let your kids play in the yard with other children because of where they come from. The lack of things that we didn't even have on our mind is on people's minds now. You know what I mean? Stay in the house and gain weight and play video games. So that's what I see. You know what I mean? I force my kids outside. You know what I mean? Get out and play. You know, so it's just a different society now, you know. Hopefully, you know, if we can continue to teach ours, you know, hopefully we'll maybe get back to that, you know, the growing community neighborhoods instead of the neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Finally, speaking of food, maybe you belong to a CSA, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture. The idea is that you pay a set amount in advance of the growing season, and a local farm provides food to you when it's ready.
But CSAs have become so popular that big business have started to co-opt them. That means middlemen, less money for small farmers, more money for big business. Elizabeth Henderson is a local organic farmer who decided to write a new CSA charter outlining what she thinks the rules should be. You can find the charter, by the way, at csaday.info. Here she is talking about several parts of the charter. You'll also hear Ruth Blackwell of Mud Creek Farm.
We don't want to be yuppie food. And the CSA movement is now truly international, and it's part of the peasant movement to save family-scale farming.
Do you worry that it has become yuppie food in some places?
In some places it has, and if you buy it at certain stores, you will be paying a very yuppie price.
Number two on the charter. The farm provides member families with high quality, healthy, nutrient dense, fresh and preserved, local and low fossil fuel food or fiber, filling the share primarily with products grown on the farm or, if purchased from other farms, clearly identified as to origin. Tell me more about this one.
Well, sometimes a farm does want to add crops that they don't have. Most of the CSAs in California do this, where they buy in things from other farms in the area. Our farm, Peacework, has only done that very occasionally when there's been a real weather disaster, and we wanted to have something to give our members. But I've had members thank me for the weather experience that reduced the food in their share, because they said that otherwise they never really understand what weather means. And this is getting closer to nature, and that's important in their lives.
And the importance of identifying the origin. So if you're going to have a CSA that includes some product from other farms, you got to be transparent.
Right.
I think that part of that is that your members are part of your farm. They want to know that what they're getting is from the place that they know and from the people that they know and grown in the way that you grow things. So they want it to be transparent. I don't buy in any vegetables from other people, but I do buy bread from Small World Food and have an add-on bread share that people can, they don't have to take it, but they can if they want to. I mean, Small World has sort of the same ideas as us. They buy everything as locally as possible and organically. And
yeah, New York grown wheat, which is great.
And milled. I think that it's becoming a thing where CSAs sort of want to add on as much as they possibly can to make things more convenient for their members, to make it more of a one-stop shop. But I think it's important to make sure that they know where it's coming from and that it follows the same ideals.
All right, that does it for another week. I guess a weekend. Another edition. That's the word. Edition. It's always a smooth exit, isn't
Maybe
it?
You should have sung the exit.
Maybe not. On Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and on Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS 89.5 FM.
We're also on the WXXI mobile app. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday.